Welcome to Stock Stories, episode 104. Welcome to the show. This is the Stock Stories Podcast, and my name is Alex, and I am your host for the today. I guess I'm your host every day. Welcome to the show. This is Stock Stories, the podcast dedicated to helping you, the individual investor, make better investing decisions. And we do that by looking at case studies of real companies and also looking at mental models. So this is a show where we go through the entire S&P 500. Yes, that is part of what we're doing. And today is no exception. We're going to go right into the healthcare field today. We're going to continue our conversation of large healthcare companies. And last week, if you were with us, we discussed Boston Scientific, which was an interesting company, a little bit overvalued, I think, in my personal opinion. But we're going to talk about one of their peers, because studying them, you know, when you study a company, sometimes you start looking at other companies that are related to it. I don't know about you, but my mind just starts going, and I start thinking, well, what about those other guys? And so that led me to studying the company for today's episode, which is in the same space, and they are, in fact, a competitor to Boston Scientific. So let's talk about Medtronic. All right, so Medtronic, ticker symbol MDT. Medtronic is a large healthcare company. They're a large company that makes medical devices. They come up with different therapy solutions. They're basically just a massive healthcare company is what first comes to mind when I think about them after studying them for a little while. And I think I had heard of their name before, but I didn't really have any idea what they did or what kind of products they created or anything of that nature. So studying them was interesting for that reason, just to find out what they actually do. And in fact, there are a lot of similarities to Boston Scientific. I mean, you have these firms that started so small, but then they started acquiring other companies that did similar things as them, and then they became these huge juggernauts. And so Medtronic is no exception. So they were founded back in 1949 by an electrical engineer named Earl Backen. And he started with his brother-in-law, Palmer Hermunsley. And it started out just as a medical device repair shop. So they were fixing other people's devices, but then they soon started inventing and selling their own products as well, and selling other people's products. So they started expanding from there. They kind of built their knowledge base by learning what was out there in the market. And if you think about it, that's a really ingenious way to start a medical device business, by helping fix other people's existing medical devices, right? Because by learning how to fix all these devices, you know the ins and outs of all of your competitors' products already. So you have a really intimate understanding of what the strengths are, what the weaknesses are. You can then create your own competing devices that you are pretty confident people will want to buy, because you know what their needs are, because they're already coming to you with some other problems from your competitors. So I think it was a pretty smart way to start this business. Now, they created the first wearable battery-powered external pacemaker in 1957. Now, if you don't know what a pacemaker is essentially a device that helps your heartbeat. If you have some sort of irregular heart rhythm, a pacemaker will actually send some sort of electric impulse or electric pulse to help your heart beat at a regular rate. And so this was a pretty revolutionary invention at the time. And the reason they created a battery-powered pacemaker was there's this infamous power outage one night at a hospital. And one of the patients at the hospital, and this is in Minnesota, they died because their pacemaker lost power along with the entire building. And so they decided, okay, we should create some sort of device to help make sure this doesn't happen so that the person has an independent source of electrical power in order to keep their heart beating. And so that was the inspiration for that invention. And as the saying goes, necessity is the mother of invention. And I think that is truly, truly the case. Now, the first implantable pacemaker was developed in 1960, shortly thereafter. So they didn't just stop there. They decided to keep pushing the boundaries with technology and try to create something even better. So instead of having to wear this device on your back, and if you Google a picture of what a external battery-powered pacemaker looked like back in the late 50s, it looked like a pretty crude device. It looked almost like a small backpack, but very industrial looking, that you had to strap onto yourself. And it didn't look very great, but it helped save people's lives. So from that standpoint, it was very important. So they kept pushing the boundary though, and had this first implantable pacemaker developed. So this really changed the game, because now if it's inside your body, I mean, it's almost like a part of your body, right? It helps your heart beat from the inside. And this invention has helped save so many people's lives and just brought greater quality of life to many. So their innovations have helped spur a lot of good things in the future, or in the present and in the future. So they didn't stop there though. They kept going with all sorts of different devices and solutions. In 1977, they invented a prosthetic heart valve. And in 1999, they started creating solutions for spinal care. So over the decades, they're just refining their products. They're expanding, as any successful company does. And in 2001, they expanded into diabetes care. And that's actually one of their major business units now, is diabetes care. And diabetes has become a worldwide problem, particularly in developed countries or developed economies. And so, yeah, it's that. So they're coming up with solutions daily to try to help people with those issues. But the big part of the story of the stock is the massive acquisition that they had back in 2015. So there's a company called Covidien, which is an Irish company, also a healthcare conglomerate. And they got acquired by Medtronic in 2015 for $43 billion. I just wanted to say it like that. $1 billion in cash and stock. So that's a lot of money. So now, this was not just a normal acquisition, because obviously it was huge in value. But even more than that, they bought a foreign company. So when a U.S. company buys another U.S. company, that's kind of like just a regular acquisition. But this was an acquisition of a large foreign entity. And if certain characteristics are met, this is actually known as something called an inversion, a corporate inversion. So this is when a multinational company, usually from the U.S., buys or merges with a foreign company with more favorable tax law, and then legally sets up its headquarters there in order to avoid taxes. So this is called a tax inversion. And what they were trying to do with this move was, well, pretty simple. They were trying to pay less money to governments in taxes, keep more of their profits. Makes perfect sense, right? From the CEO point of view. Now, this effectively reduces taxes from over 30% to under 20%. So for a company that's making billions of dollars in revenue, yeah, you're going to want to pay less taxes, and that will save a lot of money. Now, what's interesting about this is after Medtronic did this, the U.S. changed its laws to make it harder for the U.S. to recognize a multinational merger where the headquarters changes as a true inversion. So now, if a company that's based in the U.S. tried to do this again, it would have to face even stricter requirements in order for the United States to be okay with it. So obviously, the United States government wants to disincentivize their largest companies from making their headquarters overseas because, well, for a lot of reasons, but they want their headquarters here at home. And so this was probably, I think it's to date, it is the biggest corporate tax inversion in history. And I don't think there's been a bigger one since, because the laws quickly reacted to this change. Now, this also, I believe, was more ammunition for American politicians to push through the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017. And we've talked about that on the show for a number of episodes, because it constantly distorts all of these numbers on the income statements that that I'm reading. And so we always have to adjust for that change in the tax code when looking at recent data. So because of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, the corporate tax rate in America fell from 35% to 21%, which is very significant. I mean, it changed the way that a lot of companies do business, frankly, especially a lot of the large multinational companies that we talk about on this show. Now, how did they come up with 21%? I don't know how they come up with these numbers, so who knows? But back to Medtronic. Many other acquisitions happened over the years, and they kept growing organically as well. And it led Medtronic to become the largest supplier of medical devices in the world. And this is by revenue. So Medtronic is the largest in the world. They're the biggest one. All right, let's move on to Medtronic's current business. Who are they today? What do they do? Well, Medtronic's mission is to alleviate pain, restore health, and extend life. Now, I think that should pretty much be the mission of any healthcare or medical company, but I like the fact that Medtronic states this very clearly and plainly. They have four business units, and here they are. There's cardiac and vascular, diabetes, minimally invasive therapies, and restorative therapies. So cardiac and vascular is the biggest sector, with over $11 billion in revenue. And that kind of makes sense, because this is where the company got its roots. It's where the company started, with their pacemaker and other devices. But then the minimally invasive therapies and the restorative therapies, they have a large businesses themselves. They each have about $8 billion in revenue. And then the diabetes segment is the smallest, at around $2 billion in revenue. Now, the company is, as I mentioned, it's pretty big. So there's over 90,000 employees, and they serve people in over 150 countries. So they have expanded globally pretty rapidly. Now, a little bit over half of the revenue comes from the United States, though, so keep that in mind. And the rest comes from other countries. One thing that is interesting about the growth story here is that over $4.7 billion in sales is coming from emerging markets, with a solid presence in China and India in particular. So I was looking at the breakdown of emerging markets and how they're actually making money there, and China and India were right at the top of the list. So these are some of the fastest growing economies in the whole world, and they have a solid presence there. So I was encouraged by that. Like, okay, this company is already involved in the growth story over in Asia. Now, they have many, many, many products. They have over 47,000 patents, and this includes a pacemaker that is 1/10 the size of traditional pacemakers. So they're continuing to innovate all these years later, several decades later, they're still making a better pacemaker. And to me, that's a good sign of a company that is relentlessly innovating. I like the fact that Medtronic is just continuing to focus on what they've traditionally been good at. I mean, they've expanded into a lot of other business areas, but the core of their business, it seems to me, based on the materials that I reviewed, that they still have a strong focus on improving their existing technologies, which I like that because sometimes, you know, tech companies or companies involved in creating complex products, they get excited and they want to branch off into all these new areas, and then they lose focus and they're not good at it. They kind of suck at it. So I like the fact that Medtronic seems to have maintained at least some level of focus in the wake of expanding massively and being as big as they are. So I like that. So this particular pacemaker, they're expecting FDA approval for it in 2020. So we'll see how much that contributes to their bottom line in the future. And they're also moving into other areas. So they're moving into robotic surgery because it's a relatively new market and there's a high barrier to entry. So not a lot of companies can do robotic surgery. And remember, I think it was about a year ago almost, we talked about Intuitive Surgical as a company of importance. And that's one of those up and coming S&P 500 companies. And yeah, they really don't have that many competitors. I think a few of the other large healthcare care conglomerates are developing robotic surgeons or surgical systems, but not many. There's really only a handful. And so I believe that Medtronic made an acquisition that of a company that's already doing the development of these devices. And that's kind of an exciting story to me because, like getting into businesses that most people can't get into means that they may have some more success, and they have a lot of experience with medical devices. So that's encouraging. All right. So let's look at the finances. Got to look at the finances. How's the company actually doing? So for the sake of comparison, all of the numbers that I will be talking about here are between the years 2011 and 2018. So a 7-year period, I like to look at what has happened during the most recent full year of data available. And I like to look at several years back, just kind of as a snapshot, just to see some long-term trends without having to go dig into the weeds too much to see what's going on. Although sometimes that is definitely necessary if, you know, things don't look right or, you know, the mind just leads me that way. So the first number, most important number, or one of the most important numbers is sales. Sales. How much money are they pulling in? Well, in 2011, Medtronic made over $16 billion in sales. 2018, that's over $30 billion. So they've compounded their sales, their top line, at over 9% annually, which is pretty solid, high single-digit growth there. Net income, $3 billion in 2011, and in 2018, $3 billion. What? Net income hasn't grown at all? What's up with that? I don't know. So we're going to have to get to the bottom of why net income has not changed. Earnings per share. Okay. In 2011, they made $2.86 per share. In 2018, they made $2.27 per share. Why is that less? I do not know. So we're going to have to get to the bottom of that as well. So their compound annual growth rate was a negative 3% for earnings per share. I looked at the cash on the balance sheet. The balance sheet has had some interesting changes. So they had just over $1 billion of cash in 2011. Now they have over $3.5 billion. So their cash position is much stronger, but their debt has tripled. So they had $8 billion in debt in 2011, and now they have almost $24 billion in long-term debt. Ouch. So that's a lot. So we're going to have to uncover that and unpack that a little bit. Now, moving on to the cash flow statement, operating cash flow, it's a little bit better than the net income story. So they had just under $4 billion in operating cash flow in 2011. And in 2018, it's over $4.5 billion. So not too great. It's about a 3% annual growth rate in operating cash flow. Their investing cash has fluctuated a lot depending on whether they're making acquisitions or selling businesses. So that changes a lot from year to year. Financing cash flow. Now, this is the money that is being used by the business for financing purposes. So this could be paying dividends. This could be buying back stock. This could be issuing stock. This could be borrowing money. This could be paying off debt. This could be any of those things. And there's a few other items in there as well. So in aggregate, in 2011, the company had $2 billion in financing cash flow come out of the company. And in 2018, that was over $12 billion. So we have to uncover that. Now, part of that is that the dividend has increased a lot over these years. So in 2011, the dividend was 90 cents per share. And in 2018, it literally has doubled to $1.84 per share, which is pretty great. That's an over 10%, almost 11% annual growth rate in the dividend. So that's a good sign for investors, right? We like more cash coming our way, and even more so than just the dividend itself. Growing dividends are a signal. They are a strong signal of a business that has healthy cash flows. Let me say that again. Dividends are a strong signal of a business that has healthy cash flows. All right. Now, as far as the shares outstanding, they've been reducing their shares a little bit. In the comparison period that we're looking at, no, what I just said is not true. So they had 1 billion shares outstanding in 2011, and in 2018, they had 1.3 billion shares outstanding. So the share count actually grew by about 4% annually, but we have to look at the bigger picture. So, all right, so that's it for all of those numbers, but I want to dig a little deeper into this because sometimes the trends are just not very clear from all of the data that I present from the outset. So I had to look at this a little bit deeper. So I want to look at the debt first. Like, the debt went from $10 billion to $33 billion from the years 2014 to 2015. And that is because of the Covidien acquisition. I mean, I told you earlier that it was a combination of cash and stock. Well, that cash had to come from somewhere, and the company didn't have all the cash. Clearly, they borrowed a lot of it, if not most of it. So that is what tripled their debt burden, was they were trying to make this massive acquisition, and they did. They pulled it off, but they saddled themselves with a lot of liabilities. Now, since 2015, now this is the part I want to pay attention to. What happened after the acquisition? Because now the company, it really is fundamentally different than it was before. Between 2015 and now, we kind of have to put on a fresh set of eyes in our analysis and look at, okay, where did things go from here? Because the company it's just different now. It's bigger. It's now headquartered in Ireland. It's got more products and services. The cultures are different. So we have to look at it a little bit different from that perspective. So since 2015, the company has faithfully been paying down their debt, which is encouraging. I mean, it's still a lot of debt, but in 2018 alone, they paid down over $2 billion. So they're chipping away at that debt burden. And that's something that's good. As far as the shares outstanding, now they've been decreasing since the acquisition as well. So at the beginning of 2016, they had just over 1.4 billion shares outstanding. And at the beginning of 2019, they had 1.3 billion shares outstanding. So they've been chipping away at that. It's about a 1.5% annual decrease in share count, which for a large company like this, it's pretty average. Nothing too exciting there, but they are being mindful of it. And I'm glad that they're not diluting shareholders just to dilute shareholders. they had one massive share dilution in combination with the massive borrowings back in 2015 in order to do this large acquisition. Like, it was very clear looking at the numbers that it was for this purpose. So management has been doing good things there as well. So, okay, all right, so the debt's going down. I like that. Shares outstanding is being kept in check. I also like that. But I still had another question. What's the earnings per share growth since the acquisition? Remember, we just looked at earnings per share. It hadn't gone up at all. In fact, it had gone down over a several year period. But what about since the acquisition? Well, in 2015, earnings per share was $2.41. And in 2018, it was $2.27. So earnings per share is still going down. What is going on with this? But then I had to look even deeper than that. This is still not a fair comparison, though, because there are lots of tax provisions in 2018 that distorted the numbers even further. So I went ahead and I had to adjust that number and look again for the pre-tax income from the business, because that would provide a clear picture of how much this business was really earning. So in 2015, they made $3.5 billion pre-tax. And in 2018, it was $5.6 billion. Okay. So now we see what's really going on. So the average annual increase of this pre-tax earnings was 17% annually over the past few years. And also, okay, what about sales? Sales have grown at 13% annually since the acquisition over the same time period. So this is a strong underlying cash flow that is driving the debt payoff. It's driving the dividend growth. It's driving the share buybacks. So the company, when you peel back the layers, it's stronger financially than it initially appears. Interesting, right? So now let's put these pieces together. What do we expect from this business? Well, the company does pay dividends. So we have dividend yield. We have to add to that the net share buybacks that the company has. And then what is the organic growth of the business itself? How much do we expect earnings to grow? And then, of course, we have to account for multiple expansion or compression. So how is it being valued in the marketplace? Is it being valued at 20 times earnings? Is it being valued at 30 times earnings? Is it being valued at 40 times earnings? These are important questions we have to account for as well. And if we add up all of those factors, we get our expected annual rate of return. So right now, what is the dividend yield? It's just under 2%, about 1.8%. Okay, what about the net share buybacks that we expect in the future? Well, again, as I looked at the data, the company buys back shares, but it's not doing so at a particularly fast rate or a particularly slow rate. So let's just say 1.5%. Okay, as far as organic earnings per share growth, they have some pretty strong top line growth, which tends to lead to strong bottom line growth as well. So I would say anywhere in the 8 to 12% earnings range, or sorry, 8 to 12% range, will their earnings increase if I was to extrapolate, which is dangerous. Gotta be careful of assumptions when extrapolating. And this is really the hardest part of this whole equation, is trying to understand what the organic growth will be for this business. But I think for a large multinational company such as Medtronic that is healthy, that has a track record of doing what it does, I think that's reasonable. Now, this is great because it leads to an 11 to 15% growth rate of the earnings, earnings per share, if you were to add those factors up. So 11 to 15%, which is excellent. But then we have to look at the PE ratio. The PE ratio is high. It is definitely high. So it's about 34 times earnings right now. Now, you could have gotten this company for a lot cheaper. Say back in April 2019, it was trading at 24 times earnings, which wasn't a great price, but it was $84 a share. And yeah, it would have been a lot more reasonable than the current stock price, which is well over 100. So I would say to fairly value the company, you'd have to take a 40% haircut to the valuation, which would bring your annual rate of return from somewhere in the 7 to 9% range. So I think this company, because of its solid growth prospects in the high single digits to low double digits, which is a little bit better than your average S&P 500 company, because of that, I think that this company, I think it'll perform a little bit better than the S&P 500 over 5+ years, but I do not expect significant outperformance just because valuation is so high. There's not really a margin of safety here. When you're paying 34 times earnings for the largest medical device company in the world, there's just not as much growth to burn off that valuation. So in spite of this, the business is showing excellent growth for such a large company, and management is making good capital allocation decisions. Now, there's still a lot of debt to pay off, so keep that in mind. So hopefully management continues to deal with that. But they're doing the right things. They're now reducing their share count. They're paying off their debt. They're growing their dividend. They're pulling all the levers that they need to in order to improve returns for shareholders. And also, as far as future innovation, I looked at their research and development expenses, and they've been reinvesting in themselves for driving future growth. So that's important, of course, as well, especially with a technology company. You really need to reinvest in your labs, reinvest in your scientists, your engineers, in order to make better products in the future. So I like Medtronic. I think it's a pretty solid business. I think it's also a pretty expensive stock right now, as are many stocks in the market. The market just had a little bit of a dip the other day. I got a little bit excited, but then the next day, the stocks went right back up again. So I'm waiting for that crash. I don't know about you guys. I'm waiting for that crash because there's a list. I got a list of companies that excited about trying to pick up some shares in, but we'll see. So that's Medtronic for you. Hope you enjoyed it. That is the episode for this week. My name is Alex, and I am your stock storyteller. Thank you so much for joining me today. And if you made it to the end of the episode, thank you. I would appreciate it. If you haven't already, click that subscribe button on your phone or on your device. And that way you can get new episodes every single week from me. And I'll be covering a new company or a new mental model every single week for you. And I hope you're enjoying this journey with me as I walk down this journey to become a better investor and just learn about the different companies that are out there, learn about the psychology of investing as well. And yeah, click subscribe. Also, please rate or review this podcast. That would be really helpful to me if you did. So thank you for those of you who have already rated and reviewed this podcast, particularly in Apple Podcasts. So thank you for that. And we'll see you next week. Information presented here on Stock Stories is for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only. You and you alone are responsible for your investment and financial decisions. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, or financial advisor that can analyze your specific situation in the context of your goals and circumstances.